Hey, it's Daryl C. Murphy, and I just want to talk to you real quick. The Common is produced at WBUR in Boston. We're public media. We don't have paywalls, which means we don't ask you to pay to see our work. We say, here's some powerful stories for free. And then, if some of those stories you read or listen to are important to you, and you talk about it with your friends and family, and you even see the world a little differently, then we ask you to support it, because we want to continue making work that is meaningful to you. And right now, I want to let you know what's happening at WBUR. Our radio shows, our podcasts are getting some of the biggest audiences we've ever had. Our journalism is winning awards, reaching new and more diverse audiences. And you are a big part of that. Our journalism has never been stronger, but the business has never been harder. We've had a big loss of sponsorship dollars, like a lot of media companies have in recent years. But one thing we've always been pretty good at is getting support from our listeners to make the things they love. So we're asking right now, in a crucial moment for WBUR, can you help us get through this by joining other listeners in supporting WBUR? We need your help to keep making the podcast you're listening to right now, along with everything else that comes from WBUR. Your help would mean a lot to me and to all of my colleagues. So please, head to our website, WBUR.org. Thanks.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. Seth Daniel, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you, Daryl?
I'm good. So it's nice to finally talk to you. I think you're the first person from the Dorchester Reporter to be on The Common. And you're the news editor at that, so...
Yes, that's the title.
You got the head honcho. So, you know, we're here because you just did a story about how Haitian migrants in Boston are stuck waiting for employment papers.
Yes.
And so, you know, they can't work, but there's a labor shortage in the city.
Yeah.
Before we get into that, talk to us about how you came across this story.
Obviously, this was national news, and you know that anytime something happens at the border, it eventually filters into Boston, into one of our communities. And particularly this was the Haitian community coming from all different directions, mostly from South America. And we know that they were under that bridge for some time. There was a lot of controversy. Many of them made it here, and thousands of them, I should say, made it here. And they settled, and a lot of them got temporary protected status. But when they tried to get their employment papers right, it was going to be only a few months, and then that didn't work out. So how I came across it was I live in the neighborhood. I see a lot of the people who are waiting for these papers. Some of them are friends of mine. I've come to know them. And, you know, they were ready to get to work, and then it just never happened. You know, the pressure mounts. You know, you might be staying with a family member. You might be staying with a volunteer. I just, you know, I met a lot of those folks. I know a lot of them just from being in the neighborhood, and I've seen, like, what they're going through, and it's not easy. You know, they went on a perilous journey. And when I say perilous, they can't even talk about it sometimes, what they witnessed. Now they're here, and this is the most frustrating part.
So, Seth, this sounds personal for you. Tell me about some of the people you talked to in your story.
Yeah, no, I talked to some a couple of gentlemen who've been here more than a year waiting for their papers. And the place where they come all the time is called IFSI, which is Immigrant Family Services Institute, and that's in Mattapan Square. It's sort of the headquarters for this whole situation, as well as the Haitian community in general. They have job fairs there. Amazon comes. Amazon needs workers. You can connect this to other problems in Boston, like the bus driver shortage.
Oh, yeah.
This is a group of immigrants that migrates towards that job in particular, Haitian immigrants and migrants. They fill the roles of bus monitors, bus drivers. Those shortages could be history if only there was a piece of paper saying these folks could work. So this is the frustration you see in the neighborhoods, at IFSI. In one case, a gentleman, his wife and his, I would say, elementary school son got their approval while he and the baby, which is about 6 months old, did not get it. And, you know, the baby was supposed to present more information to the judge. I mean, I don't know how you get a six-month-old presenting more information to the judge aside from a birth certificate. I mean, they have that. And what more can a baby do?
Yeah.
So the frustration is extreme. And most say that they're glad they left.
Mm-hmm.
Some say that they're questioning whether they made the right decision. I mean, there's still hope out there, but every month it's fading.
Yeah. What exactly do they have to do to be able to work here legally?
So, I mean, these migrants, they have a special program, temporary protective status, which if you remember in terms of Haiti, a lot of earthquake victims back in 2010, whenever mm-hmm. the earthquake happened, they had temporary protective status. Mm-hmm. Other groups have too. Most of these folks, they've already got that. They've applied for that and they've qualified for that. Second step is to get your work papers. That's what's coming slowly in a lot of cases. It was something that was expected to take a month, 2 months. People were supposed to get on their feet, fill the jobs. Fortunately, in our economy in Boston right now, there's lots of jobs, particularly that people in this situation could fill quickly and be trained quickly. But it just hasn't happened. Those papers are supposed to come from the United States Customs and Immigration Service, so USCIS.
Mm-hmm.
They're blaming it on a backlog from the Trump administration and just their own worker shortages. You know, I mean, we're all suffering from worker shortages. In this case where you could prevent worker shortages, I think, our newspaper has advocated for, you know, kind of rewriting the process a little in this situation and coming at it a different direction. So give them the papers, and then if they don't qualify, take them away later. Maybe mm-hmm. that's the solution. There's lots of different things that could be done, but it seems like there's a lot of inaction right now.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Do you have an estimate of the number of Haitian immigrants in Boston right now?
They tend to come to Mattapan and Dorchester, a lot of them in Everett. That's where some established communities are. But frankly, the system that they're in, emergency housing is usually in hotels. So a lot of them are being placed in Methuen on islands, you know, and at hotels, you know, using hot plates to cook and having, you know, several kids. It's not a great existence. Worcester is other places that they've been going. Frankly, it's wherever these emergency hotels are located is where they are starting to show up. But the heart of the community is in Dorchester, Mattapan, Hyde Park. And a lot of that is folks who have volunteered. If they have an extra apartment, they've volunteered and IFSI signs the lease and the migrants live there. Mm-hmm. Others are family members, you know, or distant family members who have volunteered to let them live there. And that's primarily mm-hmm. where they're at. And there are thousands. I mean, I know in my story, the director of IFSI, she estimated that 8,000 people mm-hmm. in 2022. And then, I mean, I think it was more than 1,200 in just the last 3 months of 2022. So it's a lot.
And this particular problem where Haitian immigrants are having to wait a long time to get their working papers, is this a problem that's specific to them, or are there any other immigrant communities in this same situation?
I think that it's specific to them. It is a special program, and it seems like they are one of the few groups that's encountering this delay for work papers. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who come and, you know, they may not be under this program. They may be experiencing delays for other reasons. For the group of Haitians, it's a large number in Boston, And they are pretty particular in this problem. So it seems to be something that could be pinpointed and perhaps improved with a little attention from the federal government.
Understood. And you've been touching on this, but I want to ask you explicitly, what do we as a community lose when these folks are not able to work legally?
We lose a good part of the economy. Mm-hmm. We lose productive citizens who are ready to and excited to join the city of Boston and its residents and become, you know, productive members. That's what they want. I want to be a productive member. I know that a lot of them are growing weary and they don't want to be living. One of them said, I don't want to be living off the government. I want to work. I can work. I get things done. That's what I do. And we lose that. I mean, when people come and they're excited and they have a can-do attitude, a lot of things come from that. You know, there's lots of innovations that come from people who are just like, you know, I want to get things done and let's do it this way. Mm-hmm. And I think you are looking at losing, you know, a vibrant workforce and one that can fill holes that we desperately need. Every day in my neighborhood, there's kids waiting for a bus that isn't coming, you know, trying to go to school. Mm-hmm. Thousands of hours of schooling been missed because of the bus shortages or inadequacies. So,
you know, they're not working legally, but they've been here for a long time. And I only reiterate legally because I guess there's a risk for companies to take them on. So folks don't want to jeopardize their ability to stay here, right?
Right.
But I wonder, how are they getting by in the meantime?
I mean, they're being provided for by the government. And, you know, that's not ideal. Sometimes it's in hotels. I mean, think of the cost of a hotel and you've been there a year. A lot of them are volunteering. So in preparation for working, IFC and some of the other human services organizations have lined up places where they can volunteer. In some cases, volunteering at the very place that they hope to work and be paid someday when the papers come through. So they are keeping themselves busy. They're learning English. They're doing all sorts of other training activities. A lot of them are being provided for by the communities. Myself, a lot of people I know, other people here at the newspaper, have donated to IFC in clothing. In their basement, they have what you almost would describe as Filene's basement, but it's for Haitian migrants. It's clothing. It's, you know, non-perishable food. It's technology that has been donated. And that's mainly how people are getting by. And it's, you know, it's this limbo. We described it as limbo. And that's kind of where they're stuck.
Are any state or elected officials doing anything about this?
At the city council level, Ruth Z. Louis-Jean is very involved in this. You know, she is an attorney as well, so she helps sometimes in the legal aspects. She's very close to that. I know that Ayanna Pressley has commented for our story.
Yeah, I guess I should specify U.S. Representative Ayanna Pressley.
Congresswoman, yes, that's right. Yeah. And she's aware of the problem, and I know she has asked USCIS to devote more resources to this problem. She also sits as a co-chair on the caucus in the House for matters involving Haiti. Senator Ed Markey's office is aware of it as well. But what is, I don't know. No one has seemed to be able to move the needle. I don't know if it's red tape that's too thick to cut. I have no idea. But to this point, I haven't seen any movement.
Well, Seth, thank you so much for bringing this to light for us, you know. We talk a lot about the immigrant story and stuff, and sometimes I don't know if we mention Haiti enough.
Right.
Thank you so much.
No, it's my pleasure. It was a great story to report on.
That's news editor of the Dorchester Reporter, Seth Daniel. And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening to The Common. Make sure you hit us up on Instagram or Twitter at WBURTheCommon or send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. I'm Darryl C. Murphy, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.